I'm Julian Medina, and you're listening to Why the Fuck Not, the podcast about losing your fears and finding the balance between motherhood and business, all while reclaiming your true identity. In life, I'm a mother to two crazy beautiful girls. In business, I'm a branding and web design expert, and some might say I'm a serial entrepreneur, so it only makes sense that this podcast is all about the adventures and struggles of being a mother and an entrepreneur. Two things that are insanely challenging on their own, but can sometimes feel downright defeating when combined. I'm here to let you know that you're not alone and give you the tips, tricks, and tools that transformed my life from underpaid and overwhelmed to financially and mentally free. I'm so excited that you're listening today. So let's get started because why the fuck not? Welcome to part two of Collateral Beauty with Casey Lynn Mayer. Now, if you were listening last week, you know that we left off with Casey telling her doctor she wanted to take a break from tamoxifen. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, go back and listen to last week's episode. In today's episode, Casey really bears her soul with us. We talk about her pregnancy, Colin's birth story, and then we both share our experiences with postpartum depression. We are so excited to have you listening today. Let's get into it.
But I wanted a break. And then, ironically, because it was a very much a surprise, I found out
that baby Kellen was going to be in our lives.
Yes, and then I had a little boy, Kellen. He's 8 months old right now. He's the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Yeah, he's looking at us while we talk about it. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your pregnancy, if you had any pregnancy problems. Breastfeeding with one working boob.
I forgot about that.
And life with a newborn living in an RV.
I like to say that I got really lucky, like, physically.
Didn't you have really bad morning sickness in the beginning?
I didn't know, obviously, at first that I was pregnant, and that was one of the things that tipped me off, like, the entire pregnancy. Every kind of food made me, like, disgusted.
Yeah.
And I was just nauseous all the time, and I had all, like, the typical stuff. But the way that my body actually handled having Kellen inside of me, it was a champ.
Aww.
I didn't really gain a lot of weight. He was a really easy birth. It was like 45 minutes of labor and pushing, and he was here. And honestly, like, that was the easiest part. So, like, physically, I was doing okay.
But everything that happened surrounding
mentally
the birth.
I was not okay. It was, like I said, it was a surprise. So I'm gonna try to stay positive when I talk about it, but it was a very trying time for my husband and I, because we were both, you know, we're living our, like, dream jobs, and we weren't really anticipating this.
And you guys live a very, like, by the seat of your pants life, and you have jobs. Well, you do. You live in Wisconsin half the year, in Florida half the year. You kind of just...
And we live in a trailer. Like, we don't live a typical...
Right.
Certainly don't live a typical life that this was a... It's a challenge, for sure.
It's a challenge for anyone to have a baby, but someone who is, like, traveling the country in an RV. Yeah. No, that's a huge challenge.
Right.
And you're both, like, very independent with your work schedules and...
Yeah, so we found out when we were down in Florida, and so right away it was like, okay, like, no sushi, no hot tub, no tequila.
Oh. Like,
some of my favorite things, but it's okay. It was fine. Leading up right before I had Kellen... So we had two Goldens, Rusty and Lucky, and I had gotten Rusty actually as kind of like my support dog that, like, really lifted me out of depression when I was having cancer, because we were living in an Airstream in the middle of the woods, and I was so secluded, and I ended up getting so depressed, and I had done all this stuff to try and help myself, but he really brought me out of it. And then 2 days leading up to having Kellen, I went to my mom's house, and long story short, Rusty passed away almost immediately, and we're not sure why, but he just kind of collapsed, and that was that. And he was only 4 years old, so it was like a super traumatic experience for me, and it actually sent me into early labor. And then, so I had contractions for the rest of that night and into the morning, and then finally it was bad enough that we got to the hospital. I got induced because I was just, I'm the kind of person that, like, I wanted to do everything natural. I wasn't totally set on it because I didn't know what to anticipate. Really wanted to do it that way. And at that point, I was just like, I have no energy to give right now because I was trying to grieve my best friend. Had Colin. It was super easy. I'm so thankful for that. He was a little baby. He was like 5 pounds, 10 ounces. And they let me do skin to skin for maybe like 20 minutes. And then they took him away from me. And then it was an hour. And then it was 2 hours. And then it was 5 hours.
You're like, what is going on?
They ended up telling us that he had water in his lungs and he had to get transferred to a level 2 neonatal unit for further care, and he had to have a CPAP machine, and they were going to discharge me, and that was that for me. And maybe I had a chair that I could sit next to Kellen in the NICU. That's what they told me.
Maybe.
And then they waited until like 11 at night to actually discharge me. So by the time that I got to the NICU that Kellen was at, the same day that I gave birth to him, it was like 1 a.m.
So imagine giving birth and then getting in your car to drive to the NICU immediately afterwards.
Yeah, so we get to the NICU. I'm exhausted. Zach and I were both super, like, upset about Rusty. And then on top of that, we're both getting this horrible viral sickness. Not COVID, but an awful one. From there, it was just, like, survival. Every 2 hours, I was waking up trying to, like, breastfeed Kellen and...
Oh, tell us about the breast pump situation.
So I showed up at the hospital, and I didn't bring my own breast pump.
Because who's thinking about that when they're showing up at the hospital with contractions?
It was not in my hospital bag. It probably should have been, and I'm usually pretty prepared.
I never even thought to pack mine. No, I never did.
Everything you think that you need and that you prepare for just, like, goes out the window. But they gave me this weird pump, and I wasn't used to it. It was 1 a.m., and they were like, you really should try to get things going. And, you know, I was exhausted, so I didn't know that I had it on the highest setting. And so I was pumping and pumping and pumping and trying to, like, get anything out.
And mind you, she only has one boob that she can use for this.
Right. So there's another challenge that we've been working with. So anyway, then I developed like a massive blister around my entire nipple because I didn't realize the pump was up all the way. And it was just really
test. Can we get like a little bit more support from the nurses at the hospital?
Yeah.
Maybe. And like, just remember, this is our first time doing these things. I feel like there's like a lot of support when it comes to like trying to get your baby to latch and stuff like that, but no education around pumping.
Yeah. After that, like the next day, we figured things out. We started getting, I don't know, I guess kind of back on our feet. What do? It's just like something that you know, we're kind of like muddling through and trying to get through. And at that point, my partner was super supportive and was going to get groceries for us and food for us, and it was just totally survival. Physically, everything really was fine, but mentally, I think that was the beginning. Actually, I think the beginning of the mental spiral that I went through started when we found out that I had Kellen, because it was not in our plans, and my partner wasn't someone that ever anticipated having kids in his life. So we really, really, really struggled with that. And it's really hard when you're growing a human inside of your body and the person that you're with has a different idea about how their future is going to be. You can just imagine
the
pain
turmoil
and the hurt that ensued. And just really feeling like alone and isolated. I have this huge support system in Wisconsin, my entire family, my friends. Then we went to Florida, and it was just pretty much just us two. And while I was pregnant, that's a heck of a lot easier than like when the child is actually there.
That's a whole other story.
But you still, you know, you're taking the classes, you're scared, like you still need to feel some type of support, and so that was really difficult. Somewhere in there, you know, like you hear everyone tells you, oh, you know, like it's gonna be so difficult and you're never gonna sleep again and I don't know if you're prepared for this.
And okay, no one is ever, ever, ever prepared to have children. Like, I don't care how many educational classes you take or videos you watch or kids you babysat or dogs you own. You're never going to be prepared to have a child.
Correct. And then on the other side of it, it's like, oh, thank you for telling me that. What do you want me to do? Go back to the doctor and tell him I changed my mind?
Oh, my God.
To me, I was just like, okay, it's like it's another one of my projects. I just have to prepare for it. Everything you think you know or that you want to do just goes out the window, and you do it. You just do it.
You do whatever you have to do to survive in the moment.
Right. But, like, I think along with, like, that mentality that I was hearing, I'm a strong woman. I have to be a mom. I have to, like, you know, swallow all of my regular tasks and do all the, carry all the mental load and, you know, continue working. I was still trying to work, continue doing all the cleaning, all the grocery shopping, blah, 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 everything. And by the way, like, not sleeping, because Kellen didn't sleep worth anything for the first, like, 7 weeks of his life.
Oh.
And I was trying to maintain all the projects that I'm still doing right now, and there's no other way to describe it. It was literally a shit show.
So at what point did you start to think, like, maybe I have postpartum depression? Or was that not even a thought? Were you just like, I just feel like shit?
I just kind of thought it was just that I was actually doing okay, and I thought, you know, like, all the thoughts and feelings I have seem pretty normal. I expected to feel exhausted. I expected to feel awful because I was kind of told that that's what I would feel like. While I was at home, you know, I at least had my, you know, mother-in-law, father-in-law, my mom, my dad, my stepdad, all these people and all of our friends to support me. But, like, once we got to Florida, it was just Zach and I. And when you have a child, everything takes 6 or 7 times longer than what it did before. Because
20 times.
Even, like, going to the bathroom, sitting your child on your lap while you're trying to go to the bathroom or boiling something for dinner, oh, forget. Like, you have to have, like, 4 hours to make dinner because you have to take breaks to breastfeed and whatever. I could go on and on. So I think therein lied that feeling of drowning, right? I could never complete tasks, or when I did, because I was, like, very much like a list person, and the amount of things I could complete in a day sometimes was just one load of laundry. I was drowning. I could barely get dressed, and I realized, like, I was having trouble focusing even enough to, like, because I would start doing something and Kellen would cry, and I was just becoming, like, really scattered in my brain, and then I wasn't showering, and then I wasn't brushing my teeth, and it just kind of spiraled into, like, this deep resentment, kind of almost hate for my partner, that I was watching him function normally, I was watching him sleep normally, I was watching him do things that he wanted to do, and when I asked for help, it was more like, well, what do you need to do? And it's like, why do I have to say what I need to do? I need, like, mentally and physically, I need a break. And sometimes I just need to shower, or I need to go outside for, like, 20 minutes before I, like, lose my effing mind. So I was like, I need to, like, go back to Wisconsin. I don't know what I want, but I like, know that I'm not okay in my head. So I got home. My mom started giving me, like, more little breaks and stuff. I started feeling a little bit better, but, like, in my relationship, things still were not okay. And so I was, like, struggling with thinking about, if things don't work out in my relationship, how am I going to support Kellen? And just, like, all these awful thoughts. You know, it's a trying time. I think a lot of partners go through
the adjustment between being just a couple and being a family.
Right.
And not even that, but, like, how different it is to become a mother and to become a father, because there are things that only women can do. And I know everyone wants to say, no, like, you can pump and then have the milk in the fridge so that the dad can get up with the baby at night and feed the baby. But that's just not how it works, or it worked for me anyways. It's just easier to get up and breastfeed the baby because the milk is inside of your body. The baby is, you know, more attached to you because they're born. And what do? They latch onto you. You do skin to skin with mom. Like, there are just things that only moms can do. I think, like, the experience of fatherhood is a little bit different with babies until maybe the kids get older. That's mm-hmm. when, like, they start to have a relationship mm-hmm. with them. You and your spouse are just on different, in different spectrums at that time. And then it makes your relationship
yeah.
even harder.
We were kind of at, like, this, like, breaking point, and I was just losing it. I went from having this beautiful life, all my dream jobs, freedom, time, you know, money, to, like, all of a sudden just being expected to give up pretty much all of that to raise Kellen. And I was kind of, like, floundering with trying to keep up with my projects, and eventually it just ended up with me realizing I'm extremely depressed, and it I didn't notice it until it was way too late. Like, I missed all the warning signs, and I ended up late one night while I was home. I called my doctor, and I basically just said, like, I think I'm suffering from extreme postpartum depression, and I might need to be institutionalized, because it got to the point with my thoughts. I was starting to, like, imagine and wish that as I was driving that someone would hit me with their car, because, like, the weight of everything was just becoming too heavy, and I was, like, losing my life, and I was losing my relationship. And at the same time, I would look at Kellen, and he was just, like, the most beautiful thing that ever happened. So it was, like, this weird mix of highs and lows. And
I think it's crazy how it just kind of, like, creeps up on you like that.
It,
like,
creeps. You said, it creeps up until it's like a crisis unless you catch it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't even realize that what they're going through is postpartum depression, because, like you said, you know, everyone prepares you for, like, it's going to be miserable, you're not going to sleep, blah, 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 as if this is all normal. So you're sitting there and you're having all these feelings, and at the same time you're telling yourself, this is completely normal though, it's fine. So I think it's just so important to raise awareness about postpartum depression and how it can feel different for everyone. After my second daughter, Maya, I didn't even realize I had postpartum depression. I didn't realize it until literally years later, looking back at it, because it was not typical. It wasn't like depression. It wasn't anxiety. It wasn't like harmful thoughts. To me or my kids or anything like that. I had this weird sense of alienation. My body wasn't my body. Everything looked exactly the way that it looked before, but nothing felt the same. My house didn't feel like my house. Marty didn't feel like Marty. My kids didn't seem like my kids. But I was miserable because everything looked right, but it just didn't feel right. Like, I didn't know whose life I was living for a little bit. So I think it can manifest differently for everyone.
So I knew at that point I can't continue this way, that I seriously needed help. And my midwife actually saw me, like, immediately, I think that night or the next day. We started a plan for counseling, changed my meds up a little bit with my mom's help, giving me a little breaks and just being silly and taking walks and just being there, and, like, slowly things started to get better. And I'm not going to say I'm totally over postpartum depression, but being able to be, like, lifted out of that cloud a little bit, to be able to function a little bit better and maybe have a little bit more focus to complete tasks, being able to shower and do some of those little things that it just all adds up when you can't do it. And then you just feel like you feel gross, and you feel like, of course, you don't want to be close to your partner. And, like, honestly, I'm surprised that so many people do survive having kids, so many relationships.
Right? Oh my God. And then piggybacking off of that, we could even talk about not having paid time off of work in this country. But I'll leave that for another conversation. But that's another thing that leads people into postpartum depression, getting shoved back into employment immediately and then not being able to spend time with their child or having to juggle the child and work at the same time. because it didn't used to be that way. It used to be, you know, people could survive on one income. A 6, 7, 8 person family could survive on one income. The man went to work, the woman stayed home. And I mean, I've been a stay-at-home mom, and I'm not saying it's not overwhelming, but I think being a work-at-home mom now is 100 million times more overwhelming, because not only am I doing literally all the household tasks, but I am also working. And there's just not time in the day for that shit. It never ends. There is literally never a moment that I sit down and I don't have my mental checklist going, you should be doing this instead. You should be doing this instead. But let's talk a little bit about having a newborn now and living in an RV. I'm not going to say whether you recommend it or not, because I don't know if anyone really recommends it. But tips that you have for someone that is going to be in the same position.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't take back tiny living for anything. I love it, because the feeling you get, this is kind of a side note, the feeling you get from getting rid of your stuff, at first, it's scary, but when you don't have a lot of stuff, when you're done with that process, it is so liberating.
I'll second that. Not on the level that you have gone to, obviously, but having to move across country and like only being able to fit a certain amount of my things into a pod and like having to toss everything else.
Yeah.
There has not been a single time since where I thought, what was in the trash that I'm missing? Or like, where is that thing that we threw out? And it just feels so good. Okay, but anyways, tiny living.
Yeah, so I would say it's definitely not for everyone. I think a lot of people think we're crazy or wonder how we do it, even before we had Kellen, when we had two dogs. But I would say things that make it easier are definitely like having activities for Kellen, like his bouncy, or you know what? Throw on the cartoons for a little bit. It's not going to kill him. Or we have, you know, walkers that he can sit in to go outside the trailer. I think just
do you guys go on daily walks outside?
We go on walks every day, at least like 2 or 3 or 4 walks a day. And I'm lucky because I'm working very part-time right now. So, you know, I have the time to do that. And but I would say if I didn't have some of those things to keep him occupied and safe so I could walk away for a couple minutes if I needed to, like his pack and play, or just things to keep him occupied that I don't have to be fully interacting with him.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't have those things, then I would go crazy.
Your whole dynamic is going to change. He just started crawling, so now it's going to
be a couple days ago.
Now everything changes. Now he can get into everything. I think a lot of people right now are like leaning into or having thoughts of RV living or tiny house living, just with the way the economy is going and rent prices and housing prices.
Yeah.
So I think this will be very helpful to some people that are considering it. Even with a baby on the way or with small children or whatever, I don't think I could do it, but that doesn't mean you can't do it. Okay, so I know you told me that you feel like you've lived like 10 lives already. And I feel like just in recording this episode, I learned so many things about you. I really feel like I wasn't even scratching the surface with what I knew before this conversation. So I'm so glad that we had it. Really just summing everything up, you survived breast cancer. A complete 180 in your relationship when you found out that you were going to have children after thinking that you would never have children. You survived your dog dying the day that you gave birth to your child. You survived are surviving postpartum depression. And I feel like the message that we want to get out to everyone is that it's not okay. None of this shit is okay. None of it is normal. Don't let people fool you into thinking that it's normal and you just have to get through it. Yes, you have to make it through this day and get through until tomorrow. And sometimes that's all that you can do, is to just make it through your current day. But you're not alone. And never think that you're the only one having these thoughts. There are so many people that you can reach out to that aren't going to judge you, because regardless of what you think, other people are experiencing this too. So many more people than you know.
Well, and I would say don't be embarrassed, because so many women are just carrying this unbelievable invisible load that you're told that that's how it's supposed to be, and really it's not supposed to be that way. Don't be embarrassed to like start meds, or you know, you have to do things for yourself, because the bottom line is if you cannot make yourself feel at least okay, you're not going to be able to be that caregiver that your heart is like screaming at you to throw your entire being into.
Oh my gosh. And I am such a huge self-care advocate, but I also recognize at this point, self-care is basic, very basic things. It's not like, go get your hair done, go get your nails done. It's sleep when you can. Instead of cleaning your house, like I was the worst when it came to this. When my baby would sleep, I would get up, I would clean the house, I would do all the things that people can see, oh, I got stuff done today, instead of sleeping. No, fucking sleep. Take care of your body first. Sleep, eat good food, do the things, the basic things that you need to do in order to survive. Because, yeah, if you are not good, no one else can be good. We need to talk about ways that we can prevent radiation from getting on our bodies, because I feel like we are so unaware that, you know, just carrying your cell phone in your purse and your purse is sitting next to you, or your cell phone in your pocket, or your cell phone sitting next to your head at night by your bedside table, like these things are affecting your body. One of the ways that Casey taught me to protect myself, she showed us these little radiation stickers that you can put on your devices. So I have one on my phone, I have one on my laptop, and I have one on each of my girls' tablets. Not that they spend that much time on them, but their bodies are so little, their brains are so little, and with everything forming, even the smallest amount of radiation, like they hold that tablet so close to their face sometimes, scares the living shit out of me. So anything that we can do to protect them.
I don't think it takes away all of the radiation, but it limits it.
Right.
For sure. And then I have a case on my phone. They're made by Safe Sleeve, a radiation protection case. And the other thing that I have been doing for a while now is turning off my Wi-Fi when I go to sleep at night. I know that not everyone with work and whatever has the ability to disconnect themselves from their phone at night, but call me old school, whatever you want. I don't think that someone should be able to have access to you 24/7. Or expect you to respond 24/7, because you need that break of time to shut down. You need to be able to have dinner with your family, go for a run, like whatever that means for you. No one should be able to access you 24/7.
You know, I'm on board with that. I am like, boundaries, boundaries. And because other people don't have them, you have to set them for yourself. So like I say, like, don't check your email starting Friday at 3 o'clock until Monday, 8 o'clock. Just don't even open it. Same thing. Just turn the Wi-Fi off. No one will be able to contact you. But I love it. So those are some ways that you can protect yourself against radiation. We are just surrounded by it in this day and age. I will leave the links in the comments below for the radiation stickers that I use and the radiation protection phone cases as well. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to record this episode and sharing your deepest, darkest times in your life with us, so that we can all feel a little bit less alone.
And thank you for letting me have an outlet to talk about these things. It really does. It helps even like now in processing stuff. And I guess the last thing I want to say is that right now in present time, I am so grateful for even my experience with cancer, because you truly, at least in my case, I'm not talking about anyone else's situation right now, but I truly discovered collateral beauty, this whole support system. People are wonderful. It really restored how I feel about people. And I'm so grateful for every year that I turn another year older. I'm just so grateful. And I have such a deeper respect for time.
Isn't that true?
Aww. So thank you. Thank you for letting me talk my heart out.
Of course. We love you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Why the Fuck Not Podcast. And we can't wait to see you next time.